I'll just say really quickly, this has been quite an experience, this team, this group, and also being able to sit in spaces every week to reflect. I've also had this other thing going on, working here with ACPA. So that has also been a space to think about and to process through some of the larger issues that are facing our field. And so when I think about this question, I always go to the big league. We need to be discussing the ways in which we have, you know, quiet quitting and the great resignation, people leaving, and what is going on in the field of student affairs. And
hello, and welcome to Student Affairs Now. I'm your host, Glenn DeGuzman. Today, we are celebrating the 200th episode of Student Affairs Now by playing for you a recorded presentation featuring all the hosts of Student Affairs Now during the 100th anniversary of the American College Personnel Association conference held in Chicago, Illinois on March 19th. During this conference presentation, we explored the public scholarship of podcasting, sharing our personal reflections on the growth of our podcast, behind-the-scenes stories, working with each other, and answering questions from the audience in attendance. Student Affairs Now is the premier podcast and online learning community for thousands of us who work in, alongside, or adjacent to the field of higher education and student affairs. We release new episodes every week on Wednesdays. Find details about this episode or browse our archives at studentaffairsnow.com. Today's episode is sponsored by ACPA, an independent 501c3 nonprofit association, which is sponsoring this special episode to celebrate its 100th anniversary, boldly transforming higher education.
So let's go from there and do some introductions. Yeah, just go. So let's go ahead and introduce the hosts of Student Affairs Now. I'm one of them. I already done my introduction, so I'll kick it to you, Heather.
Hi, everyone. Oops, get the mic on here.
Hello, Heather Shea, she, her pronouns. And I am coming to you from the lands of the Anishinaabe Three Fires Confederacy of Ojibwe, Ottawa, and Potawatomi peoples over on the other side of the lake, which is where Michigan State University is located, where I work. And as a land-grant institution, we've taken some specific strides, I think, to address the ways in which land was forcibly stolen, not just from the East Lansing area, but from all over the state of Michigan. And so if that screen that she showed yesterday, land-grab universities, I think really does kind of provide some interesting context to the ways in which we've revered land-grant institutions and also they have perpetuated the stealing of lands from our indigenous peoples. I think that's all I need to say for now.
My name is Keith Edwards. My pronouns are he, him, his. I'm a speaker, author, and coach. My home is in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I feel like I'm reading the intro to the podcast. I'm recording this from my home in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the intersections of the ancestral homelands of both Dakota and the Ojibwe peoples. Glad to see you all here this morning.
Good morning, all. My name is Rochelle Pope, she, hers. I am a professor and the Senior Associate Dean for Faculty and Student Affairs for the Graduate Faculty and Student Affairs and the Unit Diversity Officer for the Graduate School of Education at the University of Buffalo.
A big business card.
It is a very long, long business card. And I don't know if I said it, I'm a professor of higher ed at the University of Buffalo, which is on the land of the Haudenosaunee people.
Good morning, everyone. It's so good to be in community with all of you today. My name is Mamta Akapati, and I use she, her pronouns. I generally live in Austin, Texas, which are the ancestral homelands of the Humanos, Coahuiltecan, Comanche, Lipan Apache, and Tonkawa peoples. When I'm not on a field or in a dance studio with my 15-year-old, I serve as a higher ed consultant with Huron Consulting.
And there is a sixth person who does help us co-host the Student Affairs Now podcast, and that's Dr. Susana Munoz, but she recently went to NASPA and got sick, so she couldn't make it here. And I think the last person we want to... Yay, Susana. The other person who is super important to our team is Nat Ambrosi, who is sort of our production person, who makes sure all our episodes just look fabulous. She does all the editing and the transcribing, all the things behind the scenes that we just could not do if it was not for her. So Nat, thank you. You know how important you are to us. So with that, really quickly, what we're gonna talk about today. We are gonna talk about Student Affairs Now, just sort of letting you know a little bit about our purpose and vision. We're gonna talk about podcasting. We're gonna share some of the numbers, the things that we track to see how we are doing as a podcast and what's important to us. And then, of course, this podcast always has to have an origin story, so we're gonna talk a little bit about that and get some behind the scenes stories. We're gonna talk a little bit about what goes into the content selection, how we choose topics, and how we select guests, and then what we've learned, sort of like reflections, not only the expected, the unexpected things, and obviously leave some time at the end for you to ask us questions. Sounds good?
Sounds good, Glenn.
There we go, let's keep going. So we launched in October 7, 2020, and so what I'm gonna do is just play what our goals was with this episode, and you'll hear a familiar voice. And donations are
gone. I really felt like I needed.
Student Affairs Now is the premier podcast, weekly web show, and online learning community for thousands of us who work in, alongside, or adjacent to the field of higher education and student affairs. The hosts of Student Affairs Now are Drs. Glenn DeGuzman, Susana Munoz, Keith Edwards, and me, Heather Shea. As hosts, we envision this podcast providing a contribution to the field while being restorative to our profession. New episodes featuring interviews with thought leaders, discussions with book authors, and engaging dialogue about current topics affecting our work will arrive to your feed each week on Wednesdays. Subscribe now to our newsletter to receive announcements. We look forward to you joining our learning community as we engage together and discuss what is happening in student affairs now.
Wow.
I know. I might have recorded that in like 15 takes.
Only
15 takes. Only 15 takes before we had Nat on board. And
So what's interesting for us, at least for me, when I joined the podcast, I thought, wow, this is kind of a cool thought. This is gonna be really interesting, and I wondered how long this would last because I didn't really know how impactful podcasting was going to be. And fast forward to now, and as we keep tracking data, I am amazed at what we have found. So this is sort of like one of this page just sort of kind of covers about what's happened in the last 3 years, basically our lifetime stats. We've punched out 194 episodes every Wednesday. And our social media followers, our visitors to our website, the newsletter, the folks who are signing for our newsletters, our views on YouTube, just continue to climb. And I think in the last year, we've seen the numbers just past year eclipse the first 2 years. And so we're seeing this avalanche effect. Because we are recognizing, as we're talking to people, faculty are assigning the podcast or they're encouraging this as an alternative method for learning in addition to reading books. And I think that there's flexibility when you listen to a podcast, and we'll get into that later on. But I'm gonna start by posing my first question to Keith. Keith, when you see these stats, what comes to your mind? And I think the other part to it is, let's just start with that. I want to start with that question.
I think that when Heather and I first talked about this in early 2020, if you remember that, we wouldn't have even aspired to that. And so it's kind of unbelievable to look at that. Someone asked last night, Rasta Torres asked what our most popular episodes are, which we've discussed are maybe not our best episodes, but our most popular episodes. And what's fascinating is it's different on the podcast than it is on YouTube. We don't know what sense to make of that. But the number one episode on the podcast is First Generation Professionals with Heather's ex-husband. It really bothers her. You'll be fine.
Hi, Jenny.
The other one is with Mamta as a guest on Student Affairs for Transitions. And the number three is Proud and Thriving, the Mental Health of LGBTQ plus Students with the Jed Foundation. On YouTube, the number one episode is Campus Policing and Student Activism for Black Lives Matter, From Equity Talk to Equity Walk, Rethinking the RD Role and the Impact of Sense of Belonging. And so it's really fascinating for us to watch what takes off on audio, what takes off on video. We also know that people watch the video without watching the video, and they just run it. So I find that interesting as we think about some of these numbers.
And Heather, I know that you know these stats, they're undeniable. These are just phenomenal. But what led you to start this project?
So I actually credit my career in podcasting to somebody in the audience, Dr. Ed Cabellon.
Mm-hmm.
So Ed was hosting a podcast called Student Affairs Live, which was on the Higher Ed Live Network. And I don't know what's happened. I think you were starting a PhD or EDD program. And anyway, somehow I got the referral from Ed to join that host team. And so I was a participant in, they had all this behind the scenes stuff, and it was live. So there was a whole nother layer of stress that happened when you had to go live on a Google Hangout. If you remember that. Gosh, it was terrible. So then, you know, through a series of changes to the management production company, the Higher Ed Live podcast kind of ceased to exist for a period of time. I think they might be back. They're doing different things now. And I also had taken a break at some point and asked Keith to join in as a co-host on Student Affairs Live. And so when Higher Ed Live went away, I was like, well, we could make our own podcast, Keith. And I was like, Keith, what do you think? And of course I had like ideas, but not practicality.
Heather and I went to grad school together. And what I learned in 2 years of taking classes with Heather is that you never want to present immediately following Heather. Because you will go into the presentation thinking, I'm a Jedi, my slides are amazing, this is going to be incredible. And then Heather goes right before you, and you just want to hide. Because she's got videos starring Hollywood's actors and everything. So I recommended to many professionals, and now I recommend this to any past and future presidents of ACPA, you never want to go after Heather. It's a really bad career decision. If you can, go before Heather, but the best is working with Heather. And so getting to present with Heather was always the best option, less embarrassing. And so when Heather said, I think we should do this, I was like, work with Heather. Yep, this is my mantra. So I remember walking across my kids' playground as we were talking on the phone and trying to figure out how we're going to do this and what it would look like. And yes, we're not going to do it live because that's stressful. Okay, that's great. And just talking through some of the things that we wanted to do. And then with hosts, we were thinking, who is just broadly curious is really what guided some of the host decisions.
Let's stay with that. How did you, because I think the audience curious, I'm curious. How did you choose podcast hosts?
We thought of lovely people who are broadly curious. I think Heather and I think of ourselves as kind of faculty, but kind of practitioners. I'm not a faculty member, but I'm a scholarly nerd and a practitioner. And so we kind of bridged that space. So we really wanted a practitioner. Glenn was a year ahead of us, 2 years ahead of us. He was a very important person when we were at Colorado State.
Also in the same grad program.
And Glenn had done some things around the Higher Ed Live and some open panels and the contested issues things. And so we had some conversations with him. And you know, Glenn's just super curious about so many things. We can't contain his curiosity. So that seemed like a great. And then when we wanted a faculty perspective, and then we thought of Suzanne.
Who also was in our cohort at Colorado State. So to any of the grad students in the audience, these relationships really matter. 25, 8, I don't know how many years later. It's been a while. And so I just think that the host, initial host team was really born out of those connections. Do you want me to keep going on the host conversation? Okay, because then We had an incredible opportunity when Rochelle reached out to us. And at first we were like, Rochelle wants to be on an episode. She's got an idea. Like, we both knew of Rochelle Pope, and I had interacted with you here at ACPA. But then we read the email again. I sent it to Keith. I was like, oh my gosh, Rochelle Pope wants to join us as a host. We should be on her podcast. Why does she want to be on our podcast? And so we're like, oh my gosh, this is such a great idea. So we've brought it to the larger group, and...
Well, I was going to add that when you brought it to the larger group, there was silence. We meet weekly as sort of a planning team, and I remember when they brought up Rochelle as a podcast host, I think we were just silent. Because for me, when I was a younger professional, Rochelle, Amy Reynolds, John Miller,
Mueller,
Multicultural Competence Book, that was like the book. That was such a big part of my professional career. Everything I did to tie multicultural competency into leadership development was based on that book. So I was like starstruck. I'm like, and she wants to be part of our podcast? So Rochelle, I'd like to hear your side of the story. Why did you choose to get to outreach and eventually become part of the team?
Well, every time I hear that story from them, I'm just totally embarrassed, because my experience in life is that I fall into things. You know, so there's two parts to that. Back when Heather was doing Student Affairs Live, she had us, Amy and John wouldn't do it, but had Amy and I get on and talk about the new edition of the book. And so we had this conversation. It was incredible, and she was this amazing host. And I remember walking away from that thinking, gosh, that is such a great way of sharing information, knowledge, etc., with the world, right? With our world in student affairs and higher education. And so I just let that sit for a while. And then when Student Affairs Now started, those messages just kept coming back. Oh, I would really love to do something like that. And Amy and I have a daughter that is now 28. I was talking about this, and she calls us the OGs. I'm going to pretend it means amazing goddesses, you know, but it really means that we're old. And she keeps saying this, and I said, I'd really love to do something like a podcast. And she goes, Mom, you should just put that out into the world. Manifest what it is you want. Now, I'm not saying she lives by that, but she loves to give advice. And so she was saying that. And so one day, in a moment when I was stepping into the unknown and stepping into my fear, I wrote to Heather and said, I'd love to do this. I think it's an amazing thing that you're doing, and I'd love to be a part of it. And I was expecting the answer to be no. You know, we appreciate it. We're good. We got the crowd we need. We don't need more than four. But I was putting it out there. It's my job to ask. It's somebody else's job to say yes or no. And when they wrote back and said, we'd like to talk to you more about that. And I first talked with Keith and Heather, and we had a conversation. And then I met separately with Glenn and Susanna. And I have never been more enveloped. It was just such a warm, I mean, there were some really good pointed questions, essentially, what can you bring, you know? But at the same time, it was just so warm. We'd love you to be a part of this. And I put all kinds of things into the energy since then. You know, I want a Porsche, I want this. Not that the rest of it has come, but I'm putting it out there just in case.
I'd like to hear from Mamta. Mamta, why did you join the project? You know, obviously, you know, in your career, you are, and at least from my lens, you have been such a tremendous person, particularly in our communities. And so when I heard that you were joining the podcast, I got really excited as well, because it was a chance for me to get spend time with you.
Let's tell the
backstory. I'm a Mamta Akapati fanboy. Oh. And I have been for years. I saw her do a webinar that I told last night that years ago I was sitting in a coffee shop. Josie did a great interview with Mamta on her podcast that was just incredible. You should go find it. And so I have seen Mamta and followed Mamta from afar on many, many things. And when I saw she was transitioning out of Penn, I thought, we don't have an SSAO, let alone someone who's been a multiple time SSAO. Let's shoot our shot.
Yeah. Put it in the universe. Yeah.
Put it in the universe.
And my reaction was like, you want me? What can I possibly offer this amazing collective of colleagues? And I'm so forever grateful.
Yes.
For that email, that initial conversation, you have no words will capture what that means to me. So initially, the opportunity to participate in the podcast was purely, I have no idea what I'm doing and I have no skills, and so this is a great way to learn. And thank you for the professional development experience that you have gifted to me, and that remains to be true. I know that in our profession, we sometimes get the messages of like, when an opportunity comes, like always say yes. I don't necessarily fully always believe that. I think, you know, center your well-being, center your dignity and health and humanity. And when it's possible, like maximize the possibilities for you to say yes, but center your wholeness. And so you all created a space that allowed me to say yes, and I'm really grateful. The things that I've been thinking about, because I was, Keith, in very much a life transition, a life career, and I feel like maybe it's a transition series of years with the phase of life that I'm in right now. And there are some thoughts that I'd written out several years ago, and they still hold true for me today. And Glenn, you reminded me we're at the roots of this, and it's actually really coming from the slow process of decolonizing my own energy and spirit. So there are three things that I always think about: intimacy, agency, and time. And I feel that in our lifetimes, we have been stripped of intimacy. And I don't mean, you know, sexual intimacy only, you know, but that's a thing, right? I mean, but we've been stripped of intimate human connections and just the ability to hold on to one another. I think we've lost our agency, or we've sacrificed our agency in the busyness of what we do and how we show up. And then time. I think time controls us in many ways. And when I think about my own cultural background, pre-British colonization, I just think about how I hear my parents describing their lives and my elders describing their lives. And they had the center of intimacy, agency, and time. And so I thought, what a great opportunity. I don't know what I have to offer this podcast space, but what I wanted to do as a human was center intimacy, agency, and time in the stories that we were able to bring to this space, just as my colleagues have role modeled for me beforehand. So for me, it's, you know, when you think about cultures of storytelling, I'm going to tell one brief story from graduate school and how this kind of informs how empowering and healing this experience is for me. I did not go to grad school, but I went to the University of Texas at Austin. This is not a critique of the institution. You know, we're all learning and growing, and so I just want to acknowledge that. I had to take a course, the history of higher education. Now, the interesting thing about the University of Texas at Austin is you have this wonderful higher ed program, and, you know, it's a big campus, so maybe a 15-minute walk away from said education building, you have, like, in the top 10 at the time, the number one, number two Asian studies program in the country, right? So back and forth, Harvard, UT Austin, in terms of Asian and then South Asian studies. And so I was like, okay, history of higher ed, I'm going to write a paper about Vedic institutions. So Vedic institutions and North African higher ed institutions are the first and truly in the world. I don't know why higher education seems to start in the 1600s whenever we take history of higher ed classes. So I wrote this paper, and there were a lot of great resources because the people who did this research sat right there. I earned a C on that paper because my professor did not believe that ancient Vedic institutions were considered legitimate higher education. Even down to like what we would call doctoral experiences seen as oral tradition, doctoral programs kind of chronicled based on artifacts left behind. And I was like, oral tradition also as a result of colonization has been stripped. And when you strip away people from their storytelling, you take away their agency, intimacy, and time.
Yep.
And so I feel like this is our small and beautiful way of recentering that.
My fanboydom has been validated and affirmed.
Yes. You know, and so our group, as we engage in this storytelling, and this I'm sharing sort of like a way to orally discuss topics and issues that's pressing in our profession, is something we talk about behind the scenes. Behind the scenes, we spend a lot of time trying to decide what topics to cover. And so I'd like to hear from a couple of you. Maybe let's go with Heather, if you start. How do you decide what topics to cover?
So there's a funny story about my iterative, imaginative, nonlinear, abstract, random process for identifying topics, because I am interested in everything, and I have sometimes a really interesting lineup of topics that are in the queue. Sometimes they follow a theme. Sometimes I can get organized around that. But usually I hear something and I'm like, oh my gosh, this would be such a great episode. We have to do an episode on this. And then, you know, sometimes the execution is the harder part for me. It's like, the idea is great. But then the team, like, we come together, we talk about, oh, that this would be a really great person. You thought about this angle, or maybe you could approach the subset, that's a really big topic, Heather. Maybe we should take a side bit. So I don't have any, you know, I go to sessions, I'm interested in things here. I did a number of sessions after I came back from NCORE that were based on things that I had learned there, that I talked to the people afterwards. I'm like, hi, I have a podcast. Would you be willing to come and share your session as an episode? And they were like, oh, sure, wow. I have no idea who you are.
You Gallup folks, that's Activator in the basement, is what that is.
Team Heather.
Last year at our social, she had 7 different ideas for a podcast in the midst of the social. We have a Google Doc of over 90 topics that we haven't gotten to yet. And then we have an active agenda where each of us has between 6 and 10 topics that we have yet to get organized around scheduling and getting going. There's many struggles with a podcast. Ideas is not one of them.
Yeah, when I think about the ideas, I sit at those Thursday meetings and I'm stunned, because this is where the hard work comes. We can come up with the ideas, and this is a very interesting and creative group. And you know, I mentioned that I have a role in the dean's office. It just seems nonstop, like all of our student affairs, higher ed roles, and sometimes more busier than others. And so then okay, got the idea. I sometimes even know who I want to contact, right? And yet it's like, okay, now I got to make these contacts. And so it takes time, so it bogs down. And so I know a lot of people who have started podcasts, and maybe their first 5 or 6 sessions are great, then after that it falls off, because it's the organizing of getting people, then finding the time for all of the people that are going to be on that you're going to be talking about at the same time, and then dealing with if they have to cancel. But I'll tell you, one of my favorite components of this is listening to my colleagues. You know, like when I first started, I couldn't figure out how my colleagues here, how the other hosts were having time to listen to each other. And because I'm a YouTube person, I want to watch it. And I literally am one of those persons that sits there and watches it. That takes more time than someone who's listening to it as they take a walk or as they do something. But I'll tell you, every single time I've listened to one of my colleagues, I go, oh man, that would have been a great one to do. Oh man, I really wish I was a part of it, especially since it's all organized and done. But the one thing that stands out to me is this collection of hosts. So for those of you who are thinking about, I want to do this, or I want to expand a podcast that I put together, it's really a collection of hosts that are amazing. I mean, I look at Keith, and I watch his, and I listen to him, and even in our meetings, and I'm thinking, man, this man is so intellectually curious. And so when he is sitting there asking questions, he's serious. I just want to know. And so I always take that from his. And from Heather's, I take this really creative, organized, and just warmth that just spews through her hosts. I look at Glenn, and he's the everyman. He is the everyman with, and I don't mean that in any kind of sexist way. I just realized I was saying, I mean that. I'm thinking of everyman from like Jackson Brown, you know, his album. You know, the person who you just see, he's you out there doing this same thing. And he'd ask it in a way that you would. And so it just brings this authenticity to it. And Mopta, you know, it's really interesting that you use the word intimacy, because that's the word that I have for you. When I watch yours, there is a warmth and an intimacy that just comes through those. And so I look at these hosts and I'm like, they haven't figured out that I don't bring that. And so I am just stunned at this. So I want to have done what they've done, and I grow so much in their presence and listening to this and the time that we spend together. So
it's just some beautiful words. You know, a question for the panel to answer is, okay, we choose a topic, and when we begin to pursue guests, right? Sometimes we have an immediate connection or we know someone, like you just mentioned, Trishelle. But then there are times we're like, who else can we get? Mm-hmm. So I'd love to hear from the panel, like, how do we, to share what our process is like behind the scenes on how we choose guests.
I have a what not to do.
I have a what not to do. So I, last October for Courage in Student Affairs Month, decided to do a three-part series. It was first it was a two-part series, and then it expanded to a three-part series. The third part was going to be hearing from current graduate students. So faculty in the audience might know that there's a listserv called CSP Talk that all of the faculty are on. And so I posted a call for graduate students to appear on Student Affairs Now to share their stories about being graduate students in their programs. And all of these programs are like, oh my gosh, we're gonna get our best student. We're gonna send you their name plus three more students' names. And then we're gonna have, you know, free marketing, right, for a grad program. I have a list of 35 incredible grad students, and I ended up choosing 12 people total. That was a chaotic episode. So I don't recommend doing an open call to a listserv where people are very motivated to send their students to represent their programs.
I think, you know, once you have a topic, usually there's something that has prompted that. Someone posted on LinkedIn, you heard someone say something, someone came out with a book. Books are easy because you invite the authors and the editors, and but other topics, you sort of start with someone, and then we usually talk about it, and, you know, we span the time zones, we span geography, we span roles, we span identities, we span lots of different things. And so if I want to talk about X, these folks know people I don't know. I think one of the things that's really cool is we get to find people who we think are fabulous that maybe aren't well known yet and elevate them and say, hey, everybody, look at this person, right? Let's get them out there so they're more known. And that's a real treat. The other thing is people who wouldn't talk to me will be on a podcast episode. So you say, hey, Laura Vandernoot Lipsky, would you talk with Keith Edwards? No, I don't have time for that. Would you be on our podcast? I would love to. So there's been some shoot your shot moments for sure that have turned out. Some haven't turned out yet, but we're working on that. Who you should talk to is this, and oh, this would be a great person, and what you're not thinking about is this perspective, and so then we have to sort through that. One of my favorite stories is George McClellan was here. He just left. George McClellan was on an episode around gambling and the NCAA and student athletes and things like that, and he's thoughtful about those kinds of things, so I invited him, and Neil suggested a former college president of Texas A&M, who's kind of a retired president, Loose Cannon. So that was great. And then I invited Timothy Fong, who runs the gambling and addiction program at UCLA, because I saw something online that he had posted about that. So we're getting ready to have the episode, and I kind of know each of them, but not really, and I'm sort of getting them ready. And we're talking through this, and Timothy Fong says, George, did you used to work at Northwestern? And Drew goes, yeah, I did. And Timothy Fong says, George, Did you run a fantasy football group out of the second floor of Papa John's Pizza at Northwestern? And George goes, yeah, I did, for medical students. It was really fun. And Timothy Vaughn goes, I was a medical student at Northwestern. You were a legend to us. And proceeded to tell this story about how George McCollum sort of organized a little bit of fun for these medical students who were underwater and just needed something. That was probably gambling. They didn't say it, but probably was gambling. And that these medical students really looked up to George as a mentor. I think he was like an informal therapist to them. He was guiding them. He was doing all this stuff completely by happenstance. And I love that serendipity when two people you know on Facebook, you find out know each other through things that aren't connected. I love those moments.
Any other fun stories when choosing guests or interesting or?
Well, you know, I've loved every episode that I've had the chance to host. The most loving one I'm always on the search for the college president who gets it. Maybe that's therapy and healing for me. And Mary Dana Hinton from Hollins College gets it. She's a phenomenal human being. I have never seen a college president kind of integrate their humanity and their spirituality and their sense of purpose in such loving, active, and present ways. And so, yeah, drawing from Keith's mentorship, very much like, she's not going to want to talk to me, but invitation to a podcast, and even that took some time, right? I mean, obviously, presidents need to protect their time, but spending time with her and really understanding the roots of her journey and her why restored. I needed faith to be restored for me, and she was very restorative to my faith and energy. And it's interesting. I didn't know that she was working on a book that addressed a lot of those very issues that we talked about in the podcast, but she recently had a book release, so that probably touches my heart in a really powerful way.
What about your first episode?
I was gonna say the other thing, my very first episode, and I have you all to thank for this. Our stories and how they're told and who is presented and who the people in spaces, we think about that depending on the identities we hold, right? And so one of the things that was meaningful to me, if I'm not the first, I'm among the first senior student affairs officers of South Asian descent, and I know the rest on my hand, right? Because we've all grown up in the profession together. So to be able to honor our ancestry through who we are now was really important to me, almost as an act of prayer to the commitment to storytelling for this group. And so I'm really, really grateful that the team was like, yeah, we get why you want this to be. So that was my first episode for that reason. Within the South Asian spaces, you know, we're all complicated. There are things we need to work on, but it was very important to me that our religious identities, which are all different, our ethnic identities within, and our countries, I mean, that's colonization, but still countries of origin are all different as well. Our immigration identities are all different. So to have a truly intersectional South Asian women, an homage to South Asian women was really important. So
I love that episode.
I'm going to just add one other thing that we do. Every once in a while, we host someone who's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, and who are often really close to retirement, or they have already retired, but what they have given to this profession is so much. And I, you know, probably because I'm closer to that end of the spectrum than the rest of the hosts, I think that I don't want those voices, those individuals, the work that they did to get lost. And so one of the things that I really think is amazing is when we host some of those folks and we ask them to tell their story. And I know right now ACPA is coming back to a generativity project that we had done a number of years ago, but it's saying, what did we learn from before? What's that through line? And where are we now and where are we going? And I think those are really important in terms of some of the guests we choose. We don't do it all the time, but if you go back through our lists of people, that they're there, and I think that there are people that each generation needs to know.
Yeah.
And it's a great reminder for the audience on your way out to make sure if there's some folks that you would recommend to be part of that specific topic selection, please let us know about that. I want to be attentive of time, so I'm going to ask a couple more questions, and we can keep our responses concise, brief, and just kind of go through this. But you know, being part of this, being part of this project, we learn a lot about the profession. I mean, this is straight up for us, professional development. So there's a lot of expected learning, but I'm kind of curious if you could share some of the unexpected learnings that has occurred for you as you've been part of this project.
The thing I keep coming back to is something that Susanna said before we even started the podcast, is we were just getting organized, and we say it on every episode, it's that contribution to the profession and restorative to the field. And she said that as like a brainstorm, and it is stuck for a long time. And I think moving from only critique, which absolutely has its value and is important and essential, particularly in such messed up systems, but if all we do is critique, then what are we creating? And I think we need to add that, in a DEI lens, we need to add to that anti-oppression analysis, a vision for liberation. And so I think for me, the podcast is about shining a light on some of the challenges and struggles, but that line from Susanna that I read in every episode reminds me, what are we creating? What are we building? What would better look like? How can we move closer to doing that? And we just hear from so many people need that restorative for whatever reason, need that we can do this. And I think so many of our conversations have helped bring that, which has been nourishing and revitalizing for me.
In my own self-work around infusing Indigenous wisdom into just how I try to show up in the world, I think all of us need to take Maslow and throw it away. So when I look at what the Blackfoot Nation and peoples initially their framework upon which Maslow kind of took some context and took out of context, I think is important. And so I feel like everything in our profession, everything that we know about caring for people, that's not just our profession, anything that has to do with well-being of humanity is grounded in a model that actually strips people of humanity, right? So we think of self-actualization as the thing to achieve, and that's not what Indigenous, tens of thousands of years of Indigenous wisdom tell us. Tens of thousands of years of Indigenous wisdom tell us community actualization is our goal to achieve. And when I think about, you know, we will be the first to admit that we are making mistakes and learning all the time. I'm making mistakes and learning all the time. But my heart and spirit is around how are we a vehicle for community actualization? Whether it's access, whether it's, you know, it's the story. Like, if you want to read the edited piece, I think that's important, right? The edited journal article or chapter that's edited, and things are, I've had pieces where things that I really love were taken out of a particular piece. This is the story below the story, and so you get into the earth, you get into the genesis of hope, and that's, I think, important.
I think a real quick one is it reminds me of what I don't know. You know, I am, you know, I can get all caught up in, you know, I have my doctorate or I'm a professor and I've been a professor for a long time. And that I'm in the dean's office and you can start to think, well, I really know what's coming next. And I know I can anticipate the seasons of the years that we have. And I watch some of these, some of our podcasts, some of other podcasts, and my response is, I don't know anything about this. I know very little about this. And when you add all that up, and that's not a knock on me or anybody else. It's that reminder that there's so much more to learn.
I think the thing that I have learned the most, and it actually comes back to something Mamta just said, is also tied up in the origin story of this podcast. One was, it was October 7th, it's our first episode. That was right in the middle of the heart of the pandemic. And I know I was not handling it well, right? And so the need for connection and community and belonging, I think, has been fundamental. And I don't think I knew that more than the episode that we recorded in the aftermath of the shooting at Michigan State University. This team held space for me to talk about the incredibly raw experience that I had experienced. And I am so deeply grateful for that. And the humanity that we were, you know, present with each other in that space. So I just really learned like how important, even though like we're on the Zoom, right? Even though we're in those spaces, we are still closely connected. And that is the link and the glue for our field is forming and building those connections.
I'm going to add to this. I'm going to add to this one. Because I did an episode on microaggressions and was with actually the entire housing staff at Western Washington. And I posed a question that I wish I didn't ask. And I remember after that episode, I was checking in with the team. And I was like, I didn't really like that question. My thought process was, I wonder if that could edit it out. And we had this conversation about being authentic and just, it's okay to not be perfect. And it was such an interesting thing because I would always tell that to other people, but then when I had to apply it to myself, I kept thinking, no, that's not how I operate. And it was a really powerful learning for me because it was sort of like, okay, I have to sort of think about practicing what I preach. And the difficulty of it is to practice what you preach. So that was a huge learning moment for me, and it allowed me to have good conversations with the staff at Western Washington and sort of just think about it and talk it through with them. And that was an incredible moment and a learning thing for me, unexpected. So I want to make sure we leave some time for questions, but I wanted to ask a question that we always ask. We always ask this question. Y'all don't know this question. Well, maybe you don't. When we do our podcast, we always close our podcast with a question that's tied to really what our purpose is about, which is we're called Student First Now, so we always ask a question. After this episode, after you've discussed and listened to other people, what are you thinking about now? What's troubling you now? What are some of the thoughts that are just in your mind at this very moment? And so I pose this question to the panel. You can share what's running through your mind at this very moment. Okay.
Frank Shishak did this to me, turned it around on me, and I was completely unprepared. Right now, I wrote down intimacy, agency, and time. So that's what I'm thinking about. Thank you.
I'm thinking about you all. You know, what are the questions that you have? What do you want to see us do? What's next? And so that's where I'm sitting here like getting antsy, like, where are you? What do you need?
In the strengths assessment profile, my number 34 is empathy. it's wild. But it's because I'm a systems thinker. And so on an individual level, I don't think it shows up maybe in a way that it should, but from infrastructures and systems of humanity, I'd like to be a partner in that work. That being said, what I think a lot about is where is love activated within our systems? And so it's wild. I never thought as a consultant full-time in a corporate space, like I actually sit with chancellors and presidents and VPs and say, where is love in your plan? Where you show me that you love students? And I can get away with that. And I'm like, wow. I say that with hope, because even the fact that I said I can get away with that, somewhere along the way that was stripped out of me in my career progression. And so I would ask that you not, that whatever your magic is, center it and feed it. And that's what I think about now. How are you protecting your magic? Because that's what the world needs.
I'll just say really quickly, this has been quite an experience, this team, this group, and also being able to sit in spaces every week to reflect. I've also had this other thing going on, working here with ACPA. So that has also been a space to think about and to process through some of the larger issues that are facing our field. And so when I think about this question, I always go to the big, like, we need to be discussing the ways in which we have, you know, quiet quitting and the great resignation, people leaving, and what is going on in the field of student affairs. And so I don't know if that's the top of mind right now, but I think it's one of the things. And then the other thing is just gratitude. So.
Yeah.
Lots of gratitude. I think gratitude.
You have to answer the question too.
My answer is gratitude. I think, you know, I'll put it out there that I've been out of work for a little bit, a leave of absence from my role because of a personal tragedy. And this is actually one of the first things I'm returning to. And I have a very supportive team at UC Berkeley who told me to pick and choose what I am wanting to focus in on and spend my time. And I wanted to choose this. So being here at ACPA, it's hard, but at the same time, also with people I consider work family. So thank you guys. So with that, we'd like to open up to the audience for your questions, and questions sometimes comes with maybe a prize or something, right? Oh, there they come.
Hey everybody, my name is Sharon. My pronouns are she, her. It's interesting that you talked about love, because like when y'all are talking, I literally feel the love in the room, and it kind of makes me a little emotional. I'm not sure why, but I'm gonna lean into it. And I just love that y'all have this dynamic, and it seems like the dynamic is why it works. So my question to y'all is, like, as time goes by, we know higher ed is gonna be here. What does that next generation of student affairs now look like with y'all dynamic? Like, what happens when people leave? What happens when y'all move on? Like, how does that work, and how do y'all keep that same feel of love and the same thing that makes y'all how successful y'all are?
Oh my.
That's an incredible question.
By the way, Sharon Reed Davis works in my office. Love you, Sharon.
So I'll say this is, I was a newer addition to the team. And you know, we didn't maybe talk about it, but it's embedded. What I've really appreciated, particularly as a woman of color in our space, I understand the importance of us owning the privileged identities and the dynamics that come with that, like even in our conversations. But there's never it's not a diagnostic moment in our spaces. Like, we own our stuff, or we reflect and go, oh, maybe this would have happened this way, or oh, I'm not gonna have that same. Like, there is space for humanity and forgiveness, and accountability is understood, right? And so love is, to me, hard work. Love is an unconditional commitment. Again, center your dignity, wholeness, and well-being, and no violence. But right, so but unconditional commitment means you stay in it with each other. And so I think my assumption as a new member being added in, that once those expectations are clear, you kind of operate within that framework.
I'm gonna take a stab at the question. One of the things for me that comes to mind when I heard your question is that within this group, I feel lots of love and support, and you know, obviously there's huge respect for just the work that I've seen them do. When I think about what I can do back at my institution, I'm at UC Berkeley. It's a very large administrator, R1. You can draw conclusions from that. Reputation is important to UC Berkeley. And within my department, I have over 400 student staff, volunteers. I got over 20 or 30, maybe 40, I don't know, professional staff. But I can tell you the one thing that I try to do, I hold a position at UC Berkeley, and how do I physically, demonstrably show love in the things that I initiate or the questions that I ask, and how I empower my team? Because if I do that, I'm setting the bar for them that is acceptable. That should be part of what we do. Because I've also seen people who don't, and they just follow, sort of following the sort of like a management kind of like very principle, and we sort of lose sight of the fact that we are people doing very difficult work, and so I have a responsibility to demonstrate that, and I think what helps is I authentically believe in that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we need to think about when we're hiring people, how do we make sure we're getting people who authentically care about what we do and care about our students and our staff.
We're gonna try and sneak in two questions and responses. Yep, you're next, so.
Hi everyone, I definitely did this for the merch, so that was very, very nice.
What else?
I just wanted to say thank you for creating this podcast. I think for me as a professional, this was a time during COVID where, you know, hiring freezes were happening, it was unknown, and I wanted to say thank you for just developing this because it helped me even interview for other positions in the future, get ready for being a student affairs professional. And I've even started two podcasts throughout my university, you know, one right now because I'm in a different role,
what?
Currently, it's called Scrappy Start at the University of North Texas.
Scrappy Start.
University of North Texas.
UNT, okay.
UNT. Not to plug it, but I just want to say thank you for that. And also, my question is, what does the creative process of an actual meeting look like for you all? And what has it looked like in the beginning versus now?
Oh.
That's fun.
I'm joking to say it's a 60-minute meeting every morning.
Every Thursday.
So it's 8 o'clock in the morning for me. So the first 45 minutes is just waking up. And then the last, no, I'm just kidding. But I think that we do cover a lot of different topics. We have to talk about the logistical piece. We actually check in with each other. And there are times our meetings, that's a bulk of the meeting. Yeah. But then when we do, I think keeps us in accountable, making sure that we get to all the different things, but we do definitely talk about making sure we have episodes queued up. We make sure that each person in our group has what they need to be able to move forward.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where our production person, Nat, joins our meeting, because sometimes we're stuck. We don't know how to do the tech or the thing on the computer that's supposed to make things do the thing. But then there's other times where it's like, I can only find one person on this topic, and this group will come with ideas and suggestions and people.
If you were asking about the podcast conversation, it's so simple. It's introduce yourselves, three questions, final question.
No, I don't do that.
It could be that simple.
Hey, good one. Demonte Wiggins, he pronouns from Florida A&M. I came to this because I'm definitely interested in the podcast. I followed the platform while I was sitting here as well. One thing that struck my interest, because I want to start a podcast at our university for students, staff, professionals, everybody to kind of use the knowledge that they got and spread it.
Yeah.
I see you guys do it from a professional standpoint, but have you guys did it from a student standpoint as well?
No, we've had students on. We've had grad students on, we've had student body presidents, we've had other folks on. What we've found is that the infrastructure behind the scenes of starting a podcast is really convoluted and complex. Once you get that up and running, and you have a Nat, things move along a little bit smoothly. So I think for those of you interested in starting podcasts, feel free to reach out to us. We'd be happy to talk about some of the tools and things like that. Josie has a comment. Not a question, that's a faculty move.
Well, I just am so geeked that scholarship and podcasting is in the same sentence, that words matter, and it's narrative, and whether if it's published or not, and obviously we have to play that game, but I just also want to pull to the point, we love to talk about love, but also who is going to be the next generation of SA Now? Like, I mean, not to put you on the spot, but what if you had another show made up of mid-level new professionals that then you're mentoring? Because podcasting takes money and time, and you have a pipeline. And I'm positive there are people in here that would potentially be your new host. So just an idea.
That's a past presidency idea.
No, but seriously, I do think there's generative generativity in this particular space. And I think once you have it set up and you have a mat, I mean, we kind of do that like jokingly, but literally, I think Nat's capacity could be, you know, leveraged to benefit other podcasts as well. So Keith is like, hey, you have so many ideas. But like truly, I think some kind of production, you know, kind of network is like Higher Live was, right? There were all these offshoot podcasts. So we're a little over.
We are a little over. So with that, I just want to thank everyone for coming to this session, and I believe we have a few more. We have a few more beanies if you're interested in grabbing a beanie. Please come up to the front. And if, again, we have information in the back. Please tell us suggested topics, suggested guests, and if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, please subscribe to our newsletters.
One last thing I do want to also honor and appreciate is our sponsors. We have five organizations, some of them are out there in the marketplace, that have been extremely generous in offering support, which does truly make a lot of this possible because there is some startup costs. If you are interested in the details behind the scenes, that kind of thing, please do let us know. We're happy to pass along kind of the, how do you get a podcast going? My partner did it at his campus. He has a podcast called Concussion Headliners. It's kind of cheesy actually, but it's Stephen, we love you. It is somewhat of a, like, you know, like, you did this, I could do this. So truly, what else do I want to say?
Thank you for being here.
Thank you doesn't fully capture my feelings of my co-host who presented at the ACP conference in Chicago with me. I'm grateful for all their time we spend together behind the scenes, but especially for this episode, as I was coming back from a personal leave of absence. So I want to thank them. And I also want to thank Ms. Nat Ambrosi for producing this episode, all our episodes, and just being a great colleague and friend. And I want to also thank the sponsor of today's episode, ACPA. ACPA, College Student Educators International, celebrating its 100th anniversary, is boldly transforming higher education by creating and sharing influential scholarship, shaping critically reflective practice, and advocating for equitable and inclusive learning environments. ACPA aspires to be higher education's and student affairs' most inclusive and community-driven association by leading our profession in centering social justice, racial justice, and decolonization as defining concepts of our time and foreseeable future. The ACPA's annual convention was held on March 18th to the 21st of this year, 2024, in Chicago. And throughout its anniversary year, ACPA is publishing interviews and think pieces about the past, present, and future in ACPA developments. We encourage you to consider contributing to ACPA's ongoing conversations about the future. Visit myacpa.org or connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and X to learn more about ACPA. This is Glenn signing off and look forward to the next 200 episodes. Go Student Affairs Now. Take care and have a great week.